don't know. Have you ever talked to a lawyer? Everything's caveats. You know, it's likely this. There is no yes, no. Because honestly, there is. Like, you're very rarely going to come across a problem with a yes, no. And then with law school, they're like, there is no yes, no. It's all like, it's all caveats. It's like, in this situation, yes or no in this situation. So, you know, I think that kind of thinking and mentality kind of exists throughout in their thinking. And so, you know, do we solve all the problems? No, I don't think anyone solves all the problems.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones, sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. I'm Tiffany Snyder, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad Gardner. Hi, Brad.
Hi, Tiffany.
Wilson Hsu founded PowerNotes in 2016 based on his experience with digital research and writing in law school and business school for Northwestern University's joint JD MBA program during the mid-2000s. This experience was contrasted to his print research and writing training while attending Cornell University in the mid-90s, where he received his bachelor's and master's degrees in electrical engineering. His current position as a startup founder and entrepreneur has been the most enjoyable and rewarding of his life. He has also practiced law at Kirkland and Ellis and was an engineer for several years at IBM. Please join us in welcoming to the Digital to Learn podcast, Wilson Hsu. Welcome, Wilson.
Hi, Tiffany. Hi, Brad. How are you?
Good. Now, nobody has complained yet. We're kind of surprised about that, but no one's complained about our getting to know you questions, which can be a little off the wall. So I think Brad's going to kick us off with our first get to know you for Wilson.
All righty. Would you rather never reach the bottom of your email inbox or never have the ability to block spam callers?
Well, I don't really feel like I have the ability to block spam callers anyway. So I can give that one up, but I always want to reach the bottom of my email. So, I mean, for me, that one's easy. I go with the bottom of the email. I mean, the spam callers, that's like, it's almost part of life now. So it is what it is. And I get a lot of them.
So are you actually able to go through your email list and reach the bottom of that list?
Oh, no. No, no.
It was okay, great. Good.
I was kind of surprised, too.
That would be a superhuman skill, I think.
Yes. Would you rather spend a week with fourth graders at a nature camp or spend a week in solitude at your local library?
That's an easy one for me. It's the fourth graders at a nature camp. I love nature, love kids. I got two little kids of my own. I love teaching them stuff, which is kind of why I went into education in the first place. Oh. I like libraries. I don't really like solitude that much. So I think that's my bigger issue with the second part of it. But, you know, I love hanging around with kids, did a lot of that stuff kind of all throughout my life, tutoring, mentoring. That's the reason why I kind of made my career switch from engineering originally and to go into what I'm doing today. So like a lot of my life is kind of based around, or at least what my life today is based around wanting to help kids and education and all that sort of stuff.
You're in Chicago today joining us. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. And it's been snowing here for like 2 weeks straight.
Wow.
Are you originally from Chicago then?
I am not. I actually came here for grad school like 15 years ago, but I actually grew up outside Boston.
Okay.
And then I went to college in upstate New York, lived in New York City for several years before I went back to grad school and moved to Chicago.
So do you have any sports team allegiances you'd like to share with our audience?
Oh, it's Boston teams across the board. I mean, I know. I mean, if I were you, I'd say the same thing, but I grew up there. That said, I mean, the Super Bowl was just played and I still like Tom Brady. And so I was rooting for the Bucks, and that turned out well. So it's not just the Boston teams. But the second part is any team that's not from New York, I'm rooting for any team that's playing the New York teams too.
I can agree with you there.
Yeah, and the loyalty is admirable.
Final question. Would you rather perform in a local talent show, a cooking contest, or street race?
That one's easy for me too. Cooking contest, because I love to cook. I try some pretty daring things every once in a while, and I don't always succeed, but I like trying. I cook pretty much every weekend. I don't have all the time to cook during the week because I'm busy with work, but I cook everything from, you know, stuff I make up, stuff my mom taught me, all the way through like Thomas Keller cookbooks and stuff like that, which are pretty difficult and challenging. So I love cooking during the holidays because that's when I can like take some time and really try to like do something different. The other two things, I street racing, that's like dangerous. Like, why would I want to do that? I got kids. And I don't really have like a ton of talent unless it was cooking. So yeah, I could do a talent show that was showing off some cooking skills. But other than that, yeah, to me, that's like a no-brainer, cooking.
So how would friends and family finish this sentence? Hey, Wilson, why don't you make us what?
Well, it depends on the person because each one kind of has their own favorite.
Okay.
My daughter is my tacos. She loves my steak tacos. My son... Well, when we can get him to eat, it's usually like some sort of pasta dish.
Yeah.
He likes my lasagna. And I make like fresh pasta like myself. So from scratch.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
And he likes anything like that. But he'll eat anything pasta. But like anything else, he's like, it's like a challenge. That's who I cater to when it comes to cooking. Yeah. So it's like trying to get them to eat is like the hard part. Like everyone else just kind of likes everything else.
Yeah.
But holidays, typically... I'll do like the main protein and then like one or two sides. The sides are always end up the best. It's just generally like that, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know, but I mostly just remember what my kids like and we'll do that like once every couple of weeks.
You know, there are lots of reasons why we love doing this podcast, mm-hmm. but one of those clearly is the level at which we discover the talents and interests of our guests that go well beyond what they're known for.
I don't know that I'm actually known for anything though. So.
We're making you known.
All right,
you
let's
will
do
be.
It.
You will be, clearly.
Yeah, this is just the start. Well, we're gonna transition now to some questions for you about your history in the field of higher ed, as well as your work with PowerNotes and LearnLeo. And the EdTech world. So we actually read a quote online from you about how ideas come about. And this was critical to us because we are starting to get outside of technology and education and even into the area of innovation. So you said, it's an accumulation of two things, what you love and what you know. If those intersect, that's probably the best place to start. How did this way of thinking activate ideas in your life? And what are some of those ideas?
Obviously, I think the ideas are mostly based on like solving a problem, right? I mean, you can have a lot of different ideas that don't turn out to be anything that's like sustainable or into something that other people adopt because it's your own personal thing. But if you run into a problem that you have in life, and it's usually something that someone else has too when it comes to, you know, their lives. And I think that's something that, you know, you're trying to look for a solution for. And what I found is that if that solution revolves around something that you love and that you know, then that's something that can turn into something that's kind of greater than the problem or the idea itself. And the reason being is because I mean, part of innovation and entrepreneurship generally is that it's just hard. I don't know, you know, how many people out there have actually tried something like this. Starting your own company and turning an idea that you had into like a reality. It's really hard. And I don't think it's the quote is so much about activating the idea as so much as it's like enduring it's and seeing it through because it's a slog, it's hard. And if you don't love it, you're probably going to quit because it's so hard. And if you don't know it, you're going to have to learn too much to actually do it. So, I mean, those two things to me just kind of is a nice little sweet spot. You were saying, Brad?
So, what are some of the hardest parts of that process? What have been the most challenging aspects of starting your own company and being an entrepreneur?
Well, I'll give you the answer in the context of ed tech and education. It's that even if you have a great idea and people agree that it's a problem and that you're solving it, getting people to change is hard. And getting educators to change is probably even harder.
And we, actually, we know.
and we started off in the legal education community. So getting legal educators to change is even harder. And so I think it's that, you know, people getting set in their ways. People don't always have an incentive to do what's best. And I think one key thing is that I don't even think it's their fault. I mean, part of it's human nature, right? I mean, people get comfortable. They like being in their comfort zones. What I think people aren't recognizing, and this is where I think I made a mistake in terms of how I approached getting people to adopt what I'm trying to put out there, is understanding that it's probably been a long time since they thought of themselves as a student or endured what it was like to be a student. Mm-hmm. And they have, you know, everyone's busy. Everyone has their own things they're worried about. And everyone's always kind of, and technology's moving, right? Like things are beyond your control. So like for instance, like libraries, like this is a key component of what we deal with. Like libraries went from print to digital in a pretty short amount of time, like 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of other things have happened because of that. And a lot of people that don't have any kind of say as to that happening are kind of like, well, now what am I supposed to do? I can't do anything about that. So I'm just going to live with it. Well, my point is you don't have to just live with it. You can adapt. And so, I mean, I'm not saying you have to adapt by like inventing your own technology to adapt to it, but there are other things out there that are, you know, developed by other people that are trying to adapt as well. And maybe they're in a different position, don't need to worry about, you know, their day to day and can step back and think about a solution to that problem. And something that like what I'm trying to do, just take a look at it, just keep an open mind. And that's actually pretty difficult. So that was probably a long-winded answer to your question.
Great answer though. So over our time doing this podcast, we've talked with data scientists, mathematicians, zoologists, psychologists, but you are our first featured guest with a law degree. How are the educational challenges and opportunities facing education at large affecting law students and institutions?
Well, Brad, I think part of it is a little bit of what I already mentioned, which is just the digitization of everything. So where you find things, how, and law is hugely based on precedent. So you need to be able to find things that have happened in the past, court decisions, whatever it is, and be able to tie those things to what's happening today and into the future. And so probably there are certain generations where they knew how to do it back when it was print, and adapting to the realities today is going to be a challenge. And then the students of today don't even understand what it was like back then. But that said, a lot of the people that are teaching them are probably teaching them from that perspective.
Interesting.
And so how do you then kind of reconcile that and understand the challenges that the students of today are going through, because you never went through it, and then bringing solutions to bear to make those challenges a little less burdensome? And so I think that's kind of like the big difficulty with law is, like, I mean, and this is not just legal education, this is education generally, the whole kind of like the way you make tenure and then you get tenure and then you have a different set of incentives and stuff like that. That makes it kind of difficult for you to, I don't want to say difficult, it's just people will go back to being people and kind of, again, getting comfortable and not necessarily needing to think about or worry about how the people that they're teaching are actually dealing with what you're trying to teach them. And so, you know, that's always something that I'm thinking about as I approach both the student from a product perspective and the instructor from a marketing and sales perspective.
So I'm not a lawyer, but I've watched every episode of Law and Order.
Okay.
I can't imagine that it's possible to manually look for precedents and do it at the same level of breadth that you could do it digitally. are you finding people who hang under those old ways, finding that they're underprepared or miss things that otherwise they might have gotten?
Yeah, well, it's a double-edged sword. So when you talk about trying to find things manually, yeah, you're going to miss things. Like, I guarantee that. Like, I'm pretty positive that that's what happened back in the day. That said, I've never practiced then. So, I mean, this is like secondhand knowledge and just kind of my assumptions based on, you know, what the situation was probably like back then. That said, they, I mean, this is again, another, probably a negative aspect of technology, which is they hired a lot more people to do that looking back then.
Yeah.
And so you'd have armies of associates like digging through that stuff, trying to find every single little tidbit that would help them in their case. And so, you know, that's probably better for employment and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, it was hugely costly. But, you know, if you didn't have those resources to employ all those people, yeah, your case probably suffered. You know, when you think about the equity of access to law, like that's a problem from back then. Now you fast forward today and you have a different problem, which is you have access to everything. And when you do that search, you get way too much. So how do you then sift through all that stuff to find out what you need? And part of that, you know, Power Notes is part of that. So, I mean, it helps you sift through and digest the digital content that you come up with, because we understand now that we live in a world with just too much information. And what do you do with all that information? Because you don't have time to go through it all. And so part of it is, you know, and it's just change. It's not, I'm not going to say it's good or bad. It's just change. It's like neither. And it's whether, how well we adapt to it that makes it good or bad. And so when I think of today, yeah, a lot more people are going to get good representation, because that single solo practitioner is going to be able to search the entire universe of legal precedent and find what you need. That said, you know, a law student or someone that's not experienced in kind of sifting through that quickly is going to get overwhelmed. And it's going to get harder to learn that process. The learning part is actually going to be different. Because you're doing a lot less in-depth stuff and you're doing a lot more triage, because you need to triage everything. And that's kind of what Power Notes is designed to help you do, which is kind of triage stuff. And then if you want to do deep dives, you can do that.
Do you see law schools adapting to that?
I think they definitely recognize the problem. When we talk to law schools, okay, they always talk about the overwhelming amount of information. I think they're hesitant to make a decision on what can fix it, because that's a commitment and people don't like making commitments, especially attorneys. And yeah. So, you know, yeah, have you ever talked to a lawyer? Everything's caveats. You know, it's likely this. There is no yes, no, because honestly, there is. Like, you're very rarely going to come across a problem with a yes, no. And then with law school, they're like, there is no yes, no. It's all like, it's all caveats. It's like, in this situation, yes or no in this situation. So, you know, I think that kind of thinking and mentality kind of exists throughout in their thinking. And so, you know, do we solve all the problems? No, I don't think anyone solves all the problems. And so do I think we make it better? Yeah, I think we make it better. And we have a lot of students and professors that give us that kind of anecdotal evidence that it does. But if it's not perfect, then it's which we're never going to be perfect. No one's ever going to be perfect. And so then it's always a decision that the person needs to make that's making the decisions. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. But I find that people in law always like to hedge their bets in a lot of different ways. And so this makes it difficult for, you know, adopting new technologies.
Well, this was just part one with Wilson Sue. We're going to be back next week with part two. And you can listen in on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbean, or Pandora. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.